What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of the Whiskey Six Podcast. No, this is not the bullpen. No, this is not bourbon and baseball. But I am one of your hosts, Third Coast Tom, Thomas Chavarria. With me tonight, as always, Mike, Josh. What's up, fellas?
What's going on? I guess since I'm taking second, Josh, you hold on. I see the look of want in your eyes. I'm going to start us off with what I'm drinking because I got a fun one provided to me by Third Coast Tom, Thomas Chavarria, multi-podcast host extraordinaire, dollionaire, playboy philanthropist.
There you go.
So what I've got today is a video game inspired bottle, The Last of Us, Moth and Wolf. It's a blended scotch whiskey, 40% alcohol. So it's really smooth, really easy going. Right? On the back of the bottle, as I like to do, it says, crafted in partnership with Naughty Dog, Moth and Wolf is a limited edition blended scotch whiskey, which I just mentioned, matured in American oak barrels, filled in 2013. So, you know, it's 2025. You do the math. I'm not a nerd. An expert blend of malts and grain whiskeys with a delicate grain portion bringing to life the comforts of Jackson. I'm assuming that's in the game, yeah? You played that, right, Josh?
Sure,
right. Wisps of smoldering embers within the malts embody the struggles of Pacific Northwest and Seattle. Who doesn't love Seattle? I mean, me and some of the friends have been watching Twilight, and I think that takes place in Seattle or Washington, or both of them, actually. Forks. But, Josh, what you drinking on?
How's it going, ladies and gentlemen? Well, myself, I kind of... decided to do something unorthodox here. I got two lovely little shooters gifted to us by Austin and Kara. And one of them was Kraken Rum. The other one was Malibu. Decided to mix the two up, see what I'd get. And matter of fact, it tastes like that blue coconut snow cone. It's so good.
You sure you didn't add some Bud Light to that?
Oh, if only. I think that might have made it
really
a little bit
really set it above,
yeah.
Right? A notch above the rest. A cut above.
Yeah,
so. That's wild. So it tastes like blue coconut. So Malibu rum, is it a specific flavor of Malibu rum?
Yeah, just regular.
Just regular. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then Kraken, which that's good. Everybody knows Kraken rum is good.
Yeah.
So you mixed a dark rum and a light rum, and my mom would cuss you out.
Yeah, it came out with some good rum. So.
She said you're mixing your metaphors, and that's no way to live your life. Thomas, hit me. What you drinking on?
All right. I wish I had something cool, like a video game-inspired whiskey. I did not buy myself the bottle, although I'm regretting that decision heavily because it looks like a very good pour. I've got something that's a little different, but a little original, a little, not original, a little classic. I've got Blackberry, not blueberry.
There you go.
Blackberry Crown Royal. I wish it was blueberry. That's what it
is. I want to tell all the folks that aren't seeing this right now. He holds up the bottle. I can see it in reverse, and it definitely said blackberry the whole time. Blueberry.
So, if you didn't know and you closed your eyes, you could taste blueberry, but it is blackberry. It's very good. It's a good mixer. I've poured lemonade on it and made like a blackberry lemonade type thing. And it's really, it's a spring, you know, type refreshing, clean, crisp type thing. So I'm not mad at it. I meant to go buy something cool just for the podcast. Got busy. It's Easter weekend. Happy Easter, everybody. So you got the basic bottle that I have.
That's actually a great tie-in from last week because I feel like I mentioned the Blackberry Crown.
Yeah.
And you were like, yeah, Blackberry Crown. I've got it. Now he's drinking it. So there you go. And you're drinking that straight?
Straight.
To the dome. I mean, look, you're only carrying the second dangerous option. Like, you got Josh over there drinking gasoline. I found some of these shooters. I'm mixing them. I put them on ice. And actually, hear me out. Hear me out. It's not bad.
To be fair, there was some Old Smokies, whatchamacallit?
Moonshine
in there. I was thinking about adding that into here too.
Like really just, you know, how can we make this flammable? Yeah. Next up, as always, you can catch us on all of the socials at the Whiskey Six Podcast, right? That's Twitter. Mm-hmm. That's Instagram. None of the other blue sites. But Josh had an update for me on some of the socials that we're going to start doing here in the future.
Yeah, so the Whiskey Sticks 24, that would, you can catch us there on Instagram. And something that we're planning on here into the future is coming up with a fitness socials as well, right? We are still in the works to boot up more so on the Whiskey Sticks gaming as well. So hopefully here in the future, you'll start seeing us stream a lot more. You'll catch us on Twitch, Kick, all the streaming platforms, YouTube, hopefully in the near future. But one of the biggest things that we're going to go ahead and try to start up here is Whiskey Sticks Fitness. So look out for that. We will put that on our podcast Instagram, put the socials there. That way everybody can head over there and, you know, check it out. We'll give you our tips and tricks on, you know, how to stay in shape, how to get in shape. We know summer's coming around. So, you know, people want to look good, right? We'll give you meal ideas as well as, you know, what to do when you're in the gym. So look out for that.
Absolutely. I got to get you like a custom shaker that looks like a Bud Light can. That's necessary. Wow. Like, I feel like that's got to be in the photos, right? Like,
yeah, Bud Light.
Add it in there. Yeah. All right, Thomas, take us to sports. What's going on? How are my Rockets doing?
All right, guys, for all of y'all that are interested in Houston sports, we're Houston guys. Right now is a great time to be a Houston sports fan. The Houston Rockets, which Mike just mentioned, are in the playoffs. They are set to kick off round one versus the Golden State Warriors here in about an hour and a half at time of recording. They're good. They're the two seed. The Warriors have been their nemesis. They're a little older, a little longer in the tooth, but very dangerous. Obviously, they're led by Steph Curry. The recent acquisition of Jimmy Butler has revitalized them. Draymond Green is still a dirty-ass player. I will say that until the end of time. And he's still there fouling people egregiously, so expect that tonight. It should be a really good game. I'm really hoping the Rockets can do it. I predict they can do this in six. We'll have to see what happens. But that's the basketball side of things. Right now, currently, the Astros are playing. They started out of the gate a little slow. They've won the first two games of the series with the San Diego Padres. They're going for the sweep tonight. They are down currently 1-0 behind Framber Valdez. Had trouble in the first inning. Had a freak injury to one of the San Diego Padres players. Drugged the inning on forever. He threw a ton of pitches. But dude's battling. Hopefully the Astros can pull that out, sweep, and get above 500 for the first time this season. Well, second time this season, I apologize. They were originally 2-1, but since then. And then the Dynamo last night, I'm rocking a Dynamo cap tonight. They drew 2-2 yesterday. Really inspiring game. Got out early, then got behind late. Their new acquisition they picked up in the transfer window right before it ended, an attacking DP type number 10, scores a header, ties the game. And also, if you're a football fan of the American variety, the NFL draft is Thursday. Texans have the 25th pick. I believe they'll trade back because there's a lot of talent. It's a really deep draft. They've got the ability to go out and get a couple picks and then turn around and bolster their team that way. We'll just have to see what happens. And that's Houston sports in a nutshell.
So let me address them as they came out. The Rockets. Boy, am I annoyed with the media and the hate that Houston gets. I've never seen a two seed get so much disrespect, right? Like going into a matchup, like, oh man, we don't know who's going to win. What do you mean? The two seed, they're the favorite. In any other sport, I don't care. They are the favorite. They have a young team. It's not like they lucked into the playoffs. Like, they had a really good season all season long. So I really hope they do it in, like, five. Like, I'm taking the under, right? Like, Curry was held to 3 points the last time they met up, and I believe that was in Golden State. So if they can recreate that even to any degree, I think that's great. Get Draymond mad early. Hold Curry down and beat him if you have to. No offense, it's the playoffs, anything goes. Secondly, Astros. I have two buddies at work, one of which I've known for quite some time. That is a Stephen Bloomer. And then Curtis, they're both Padres fans. And I told them on Friday, like, best of luck to you. But don't be mad when the Astros come through, because y'all might be good, but y'all ain't that good. The Astros are always a contender. Everybody thinks that when they start a season slow that they're, like, lost in the sauce and don't know what they're going to do. But I believe that the Astros always have a dog in the fight. I think that they've never been really big on the early step into the season. They are always, let's figure it out. Let's take our time. The losses early don't matter. They really don't. because I've year after year, the Astros slow start, and then they're in the playoffs again. And then the Astros slow start, bam, playoffs done, World Series, what's up? Like, we're doing things. Like, so I'm never really worried about the start to a season. I think that actually they should be studied in a lab, because they basically lost the roster, rebuilt a new one, and it's competitive, right? Like, that's, if I'm a different team in the league, I want to know how they're doing, what they're doing, and I want to recreate the wheel. I think the Astros have one of the best farm systems in the league, and that is shown by their repeated success over time, right? Like, I think if the Cubs could figure out how to hold and keep talent, they'd be better, but they're not. They're the Cubs. So the Dynamo did win. I saw the snap. Or it did draw, sorry. I looked at the rest of MLS because, you know, it inspired me. And Sporting KC beat the San Jose Earthquakes. I believe that's their team name. I'm not huge in the MLS. 5-2. Damn. Like, for the game that I don't go to, they're just scoring goals. Absolute scoring goals. I was like, man, to be in that stadium must have been electric. Because, like, you've been in a game. I've been in a game. When they score, it's always hyped up. Like, it's like, oh, the lights go black and blue, whatever. It's awesome. So that was dope. And then, of course, competitive cornhole throwing. Y'all catch up this weekend?
No, can't say I did.
You know, it was, I was going to catch it, but bowling came on, and I'm a bowler. Ooh, so yeah, I picked up bowling first.
Billy Bob Jimenez threw a four-bagger. You missed. You missed, man. That was epic. Yeah, that Josh is like, I know Nintendo.
Billy Bob, you said?
Billy Bob Jimenez.
I think it said Jimenez. I don't think it's Jimenez.
Oh, yeah. I might have been pronouncing it a little too Hispanic for my own taste. But yes. So moving on, we are going to kick this episode off because I haven't even told you what it's about. But you'll find out now. Recently, I was inspired by, you know, Taylor Swift to do an Eras tour of my own. And what is that? You might be asking. The Eras tour will be a look into the past as we walk through the last few decades, favorite consoles and video games. We'll also talk about what brought us to gaming and our favorite games we have ever had over the years. Now, let's set the scene for this, like, 70s, 80s vibe, right? And I did the research. Like, so this isn't just made up nonsense. It's Friday night, and you're in high school. What do? Go drink with some friends, smoke some weed, and cause some trouble. Wait, there's this new thing. It's just down the street. It's like an arcade. But somebody just told me, my friend Billy Bob, was like, hey, there's a new business on the street with a lot of lights, neon carpet, the smell of popcorn going through the front doors, and your friends keep telling you of some games there to play. Might as well take a peek, right? Time to venture into the new arcade, right? Crazy, crazy 70s, the 70s of gaming, right? This is what it was, because I had to go watch Dazed and Confused to really get me into the mindset, right? So to start off our Eras tour, we have to start with the 1970s, which was the first decade in history to introduce video games to your home. They started off in arcades and saw the growth of the gaming community and decided that they wanted gaming to be brought into homes and the personal computers. One thing has stayed true through the years of gaming is that it is the love of gaming with friends and meeting new people.
True.
So when you guys think brand new, right, like the Magnavox Odyssey, right? Y'all don't remember that, do you? That I had to look it up. I'm not going to lie. So it came in a box, like a suitcase of sorts, right? And you open the suitcase. And it's got this, like, it's got two controllers, which you don't get that anymore. You're lucky to get one. It's got two controllers and the console, and all the controls are analog. And it had a bunch of, like, screen clings because static electricity was king back then. And, like, it had a bunch of different games. Namely, Pong, soccer, hockey, football.
That's right.
Right. And if you wanted to change the game, you merely just put the cling on the TV because there was enough static electricity to do that. And no adult in the world was worried about that. Different times, right? So you put that on there and then you click your little analog thing to, like, find the right game. And you're playing Pong. And then you put that different cling and you're playing hockey, which, weirdly enough, you take the cling off, it's still Pong. But it's hockey with a cling, right? So I admit that back then games were simpler than we are now. But Thomas is the oldest man in the room, so we will constantly bring that up. That you remember back then, you know, like you'd get a game and you were like, man, this is nuts. Like, these graphics are insane, right? We all played Tomb Raider once, but we're not going to talk about that yet.
Right.
But yes, so the 1972, the Magnavox Odyssey was the first game home gaming console that was released, where it displayed three square dots, one black, one light, one white, which took us to Pong. And then moving forward, and in 1975, we would see the Atari. Most people tend to know it resembled a lot of the Odyssey in the same gaming concept. It didn't really transform until much later. But like the Atari had a starting console, right? We all had like a starter relationship when we were in high school. Like, this is the one. I love her. Yes. Like, everybody thought the initial Atari was hot fire. But in reality, when you would go on to meet the 2600, it was hot garbage. Like, let's be honest. But so talk to me. This is the 70s right now. You're thinking base gaming, right? Like, there were games that came out in this era, like was it Maze War? That was a PC game, right? It and I watched a video on it, and it was like they showed two computer systems right next to each other. And they said, look, you can walk through this maze. And on the bottom of the screen, it was like an actual drawn out like maze, like 2D display. And above that, you had this high tech 3D, like all walls, you know, the pictures you used to draw in art with a ruler where you draw like, you know, concept of depth, and you're like an eyeball, and you would travel around and you would shoot like this other eyeball because you would connect via Ethernet, which they said it like it was like a scientific term in this video, like because it was from the time. So it was like, oh yeah, we got this thing, it's called Ethernet. I don't know how it works, but you just plug one into each one and you're now gaming. And we would go on to know that that would be LAN, right? Local area network gaming. And if you haven't been to a LAN party, go find one. They still do them. It's weird that they still do them, but they still do them.
They're fun.
So talk to me, boys. This is pre anything we've ever owned, I think. I don't know. Yeah. Thomas, did you ever have an Atari?
So our parents had an Atari 2600. That was what introduced me to it. I'll never forget, you know, I didn't know what I was looking at. And then, you know, ironically enough, it was our mom that was like, hey, this is gaming. And she was really good. Mom, for all the, you know, straight, narrow all the time, she was a nasty ping pong player. Or not ping pong.
Pinball?
Pinball, thank you. Pinball player. Nice. And really, really good would be, you know, later on in life, you know, showing off her skills all the time.
Pinball wizard.
High scores you could never see because she was in there forever. And I want to say the Atari was hers. I don't think Dad really got down. You know, as a kid, I was just like, this is cool when they let me play it. And you know, I got to be first introduced to my first gaming on Atari 2600.
Right. Well, that's what's up. Yeah. I had to go look it up because I'm younger by a bit. So there's actually like some online, you know, what do you call that when you steal things? Emulators. Sorry, not steal things, borrow. Emulators. And you can go play throwback games. There's also a bar downtown in Kansas City. And I will always bring up a bar downtown in Kansas City because I've been to them. It's called Up Down. It's got all the arcade classics upstairs. There's a bunch of pinball games. Great place to get drunk. I mean, have fun, play games. They got some new stuff, but a lot of it's really old, like a lot of the pinball machines. I mean, they got things that you've never played before that came later in life in like the 80s or so. Mm-hmm. But I think that arcade culture has always been alive. Even when, you know, we were kids, like you try and go get tickets or, you know, some people wanted tickets and stuffies and I wanted to get the high score. And that's the drug, the chase of the high score, right? Yeah, like, I know there's like some speedrunners that do like 80s games or like 70s games, retro games, to do it the best. And, you know, I remember watching a YouTube video over the, who did it? I think it might have been a Sega or maybe it was Nintendo. In Florida, they did like a under 12 like tournament, and it was like you had to play like four different games on this console. And it was a special cartridge. It was like the tournament cartridge. And it would put you into this game until you got the task done. And then it would take you to the next game until you got the task done. And like, these guys are like real nerds about it. Like, I think it was like a Super Mario thing, right? And like, he's like, yeah, if you just died at this one point, you could farm coins. And that quest was to get 50 coins as fast as possible. And the whole goal was to get to Tetris. They were like, yeah, everybody wanted to get to Tetris as fast as possible because that game, if you've ever played Tetris, and you're like, oh, I know shapes. I know they're all squares. They're all squares. Yeah, okay, nerd. You come show me the high score with all these squares. Because no matter what I've ever done in my life, and I will never say that I'm the best at Tetris, I've always found ways to get in trouble in Tetris. Like, I'm like doing good. I'm making my little lines, you know, whatever. Like, I always get in trouble with Tetris. It never fails. But Josh, what kind of 70s gaming, you know, are you familiar with? I know you're the youngest of the group, the baby of the herd, but you also have a weird, you know, gaming habit.
Well, for me, some of the earlier stuff, I have played Tetris. I do really like that game. It's a good, I guess, brain teaser. Massages the brain the right way, I guess. That was a good game. 70s game, Galaxian. I remember playing that. What's it called? I do remember the Atari 2600 now.
One thing that
yes.
Well, Google?
Yes, Google. one thing that I can say, at least to me personally, I did like their controller, though, that it had the joystick and the button. Yes, okay. People can't see it, but yes. But I felt like the controller was really cool. Hey, little joystick, little button. I'm like, okay, cool.
Real simple. I don't like when the controllers get weird on me, right?
Yeah, no. It's too complicated. Just, you know, stick, button, good to go. So I thought that was really cool with the Atari. And then further on, you know, once they actually made controllers, it pretty much stayed the same from that point on. But I do remember the Atari with the cartridges and whatnot. But, I mean, even though, like, Atari came, the 2600 came out with that, I feel like they did themselves make a pavement for all these future better consoles that came, you know,
more buttons, more sticks. It's been, what, 50 years, something like that, since the 70s? Crazy, right? Nobody thinks about it like that. Crazy.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes, actually.
Has it?
And now we got two sticks, you know, so we're really winning the war on sticks. So, yeah. Thomas, being grandpapa, will you talk to me about some of these 70s games, maybe some of these Atari games? I know we talked about them before, but if you could elaborate.
So I've got a couple games, but they really like were developed in the 70s to be played in the 80s. So
it's a blur. It's a line. People were in fast times, a lot of cocaine.
Wow. I wasn't there. I believe it, but I wasn't there. Anyway, a couple popular ones that, again, mom put me on, so I'm putting y'all on. Pitfall was by far her favorite. The classic side-scroller to be able to, you know, get up, down, and around different hazards. The player must maneuver a character, Pitfall Harry. That is definitely on somebody's trivia whatever Thursday night to win free drinks.
Mark it down. It's Pitfall Harry.
Pitfall Harry. You heard it here first.
Harry Pitts, Pitfall Harry. I gotcha. I'm locked in.
You go through a maze like jungle and attempt to recover 32 treasures in a 20-minute period. Along the way, you got numerous hazards, including pits, quicksands, rolling logs, fire, rattlesnakes, scorpions, and crocodiles. It was a lot of fun. Definitely along the same brain teaser. Okay, Rubik's Cube. I have to figure out the right way to get up, down, and around. A lot of fun. You get points for collecting money bags, silver bars, gold bars, and a diamond ring. It was really like something like, you know, for the fans of the games that came out later that we'll get into, this was really the genesis. You know what I mean? Not to play on words there, but maybe I did, maybe I didn't. I don't know. It just kind of worked out that way. Another classic, another mom favorite. I'm going to lean on her, Evie. She's going to listen to this and probably either love it or hate it. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Dig Dug. Dig Dug was another one released by Namco. Namco was making a ton of video games back in the day. Shout out Namco. They were, again, the grandfathers of the gaming age. 1982, it was distributed by Atari. The player digs underground tunnels to attack enemies in each level by either inflating them to bursting or crushing them underneath rocks. Dig Dug was planned and designed by Masaisha? That's a name I'm guaranteed to screw up.
It's got to be like Japanese, bro. You got to let it go. You got to just let it roll off your back. Masaisha.
Ikami. Ikagami. I think I did that one better.
That with the help Japanese, from brother.
Galaga creator Shigeru Yokoyama. Bro, they're tough.
They are hitting you in the chest.
Yeah, Shigeru Yokoyama.
So, fun fact, both of those games would be released in 1982, and the following year, Thomas would be released. So,
yeah. I'm not saying that those got me out, but you never know.
Right. And I think I was talking to Josh about Galaga. No? You're a fan of the game when I asked who liked what games?
Yes, sir.
Talk to me about Galaga for a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So with Galaga, again, so like Tom's was saying here, this is also a game that was made by Namco. And much like he said...
That's Big Daddy Bandai. Get with it.
Yeah, Bandai Namco, if you will. And much like he said, Shigeru Yokoyama also created this game.
Wild. Somebody watch his anime. He walked through that Japanese day like nothing.
Well, hold on. I feel like I set up the lob for him to dunk it. That's where I'm coming.
Perhaps you helped him sound it out.
Yeah. Good assist. I'll take it. So, developed with Namco, and if people are, you know, aware of Galaga, a lot of people are aware of Galaga, but not many people know the previous act, which was Galaxian. And the reason being for it is because Galaxian wasn't as good as Galaga. Galaxian was, it didn't have really pleasant sounds. The graphics weren't as good. There was a lot of bugs within it. It was a very repetitive game.
Isn't the game about killing bugs?
No, ships.
They look the same to me. I don't know. It's bits. Yeah. We're operating in bits here. Squares, little squares, guys.
And
thanks, Magnavox.
And a big portion of that is Galaxian came out in 1979, right? And the golden age of arcade was 1978 to 1983. They were trying to push these games out, right? So with that short window, Galaxian came out in 1979. Galaga, after that, the sequel came out in 1981 with way better sounds, graphics. They fixed a lot of the bugs where, like, they really couldn't see the bullet as they were traversing. Way too many, you know, big windows as they were trying to shoot these fighters down. So it was much more difficult, Galaxian was, right? And so coming into Galaga, it got way, way better. It was more challenging. What's it called? I mean, not as challenging, rather. So that was the big difference. Is Galaxian was challenging. Each diving ship sent a barrage of bullets. So much so that if you were in a corner, there's no way you're going to evade that.
I'm starting to think you like Galaxian more than Galaga.
It's 1970s, 1980s, you know?
As you're talking about Galaga, he's like, Galaga will get there, but Galaxian? Have you heard about Galaxian, though? Like, a lot of people know Galaga, nobody knows Galaxian.
I'm telling you the differences here, right, of both of them, right? So Galaga had way more pleasant sounds, way better graphics, and with Galaga, you could actually shoot two bullets instead of the one.
Two
whole bullets. Wild.
Yeah. Revolutionizing the game.
I'm saying. It had way better catchier background music. And in Galaga, the bullet was actually marked by a red dot at the tip. Right? So, you
like
know,
a missile.
To ensure, yes, like a missile. Exactly, right?
Okay.
And also, you know, a great feature that Galaga had was that you were able to get captured by the ships. And
it's a great feature, would you say?
So, the reason being is because once this ship captures you and you're able to shoot down that ship, you get your ship back and you now have two ships being able to attack for you, which I thought that was like such a great thing to do, because as soon as those ships come down and they're, you know, trying to take my ship, I let them take it. I want to be rolling out with two ships trying to get as much points as possible.
I believe that you let them take it. I believe that. Yeah. I can see it in your eyes.
Yeah, you want that.
You gave it up willingly.
Galaga was way better with a lot of more different unique levels as you moved on. And the bonus stages they also have that they called challenge stages, always being able to get, you know, more points and stuff, and which I just felt it was a lot better. Galaxian was too challenging. What's it called? You needed to be really accurate in that game. So Galaga was definitely a way better step up, and they were trying to roll these out. And whenever they say that both of these were back-to-back releases, there was a gap. There was a 2-year gap, you know, in between these two games that were released. What's it called? Galaga was a simple game that anyone and whatever age you were could quickly pick it up, but still met with challenging obstacles, though. I felt like due to the better sound, the variety. Yeah. And so that was the thing. In Galaxian, there was just a wub-wub, like, annoying
sound. I
did
wub-wub, though. I'm a season of wub kind of guy.
Yeah.
Well, back to the wubs.
Just always hearing it repetitively over and over again. People got tired of it, you know? And so it wasn't an appeal to them, you know, until Galaga came out. You know, with the better sound, the variety, It was able to thrive during this golden age period, because as soon as Galaga dropped, not too many people were playing Galaxian anymore. Galaga is the better of the two and the version that people would prefer to play.
The better received, up to 12 million copies to date, including re-releases.
And I mean, plenty of consoles that this has gone release on. First being the arcade, right? You have the Sega 1000 that it came out on. It also came out on MSX, which was a standard home computer, by the way. So it was essentially a keyboard, plug-in, you're good to go.
Yeah, TV, I know in it. The times, that was a big one, right?
Yeah.
No, it was actually top of the charts all the way to 1987. Like, it held it down. The high score being 9.5 million, or 9,546,530, to be exact, if you're trying to shoot for that title. Held by Jordan Domingo. Took him 14 hours and the better part of 2 days. He also beat the marathon high score of 20,980,450 the very next day. So if you're going to talk Galaga, you're talking about Jordan, the greatest of all time. You know, sound familiar? Dude. I rest my case. It's a tinfoil hat stuff. Got some guy named Jordan's got to be the number one.
Right. But one of the more popular consoles that it came out on was actually NES. For some of y'all that don't know what that actually means, is the Nintendo Entertainment System, which came out in 1983 in Japan, July 15th, to be exact, actually called Famicom. That was the original name in Japan. Once the States got it, the United States, in October 18th, 1985, that's whenever they decided to call it Nintendo Entertainment System, the NES. It was an 8-bit processor, and it was a cartridge-based game, so... I mean, and I'm sure everybody's aware, like, cartridge doesn't work. You blow on it, put it back in.
Top bad habits to young adults.
But it worked. It worked, right? Some of the iconic games that came out for the NES were Super Mario, The Legend of Zelda, Mega Man, Pac-Man, Metroid, Punch-Out, Kirby, and Tetris, like we were just talking not too long ago. And one thing that I did like about the NES, though, was that it... let third-party development, right? They were the first console, you know, to give them this, the encouragement to be like, hey, we set out a console there. Y'all do what y'all will with it. And which was good, because that's how we were able to get, you know, a lot of these other games that weren't, you know, made by Nintendo, which I thought was really cool.
So, yeah, for me, I mean, you got to think, like you said, Donkey Kong, Tetris, Legend of Zelda, Super Mario Brothers, Galaga, like Nintendo. Right, like a giant. They launched Mike Tyson Punch Out, Super Mario Bros, Kirby's Adventure. Kirby is actually, it's funny. I believe that there's a theory behind the Kirby game. There was a lawyer that was fighting on behalf of Nintendo because there was some legalities that may or may not have translated into Japanese. And their lawyer's name was actually Kirby. And I feel like with everything that I know, that's like a shout out to the man, because without that dude, there would be no Nintendo. Like, they were on the ropes, and if they would have lost this lawsuit, Nintendo wouldn't have had the money to continue doing business. And this is early on in its inception, so that's the most critical time in any developer, console, or game. That's like the most critical time to have issues. That's why it's so important to like read between the lines, do the fine details. After the NES, like, you had some other stuff that popped out, like the Atari 7800 that would try to compete with Nintendo, and the eventual release of the bigger, badder Sega and the Sega Genesis. Some of the beloved games they released were like Dig Dug, Galaga, again. Like, it's on every console. That's what I'm trying to point out here. Every console, like, the same games kind of hit these different consoles because that's what people wanted to play. So if you wanted to contend in these times, you had to have access to those games. Pole Position. Thomas remembers Pole Position. I know he does, because I have nightmares of like just little red and white lines on the side, just, and that's all you saw. And you like your eyes will start to burn after a while, because you're like locked in the car, but those lines are going, and like your peripheral vision is picking them up the whole time. But so Nintendo was the biggest console drop in that time, and I think it had a lot to do with price point, availability, game selection, like, and support. which is something that some people may not remember. Before we had YouTube, before we had, you know, the interwebs, this is back when everything happened on phones, they had Nintendo support. And this is when you didn't have game guides, because even there was a time in the early 90s, 2000s, where like they would release game guides when the game released. Like, here you go. If you get into trouble, look at this. So they had what was called Nintendo support, and you could call this number that was on the back of your video game. Yep. And if you were stuck somewhere, there was a sad, sad soul sitting behind a desk, and he had every console Nintendo owned. And he would have to pick up the game. He'd pull out this massive 2-inch, 3-ring binder for this console, and he'd flip. Oh, you're stuck at this point of this game. And if they didn't already run into this problem, you would just have to work your way through it with the guy on the phone. Like, you got like the kitchen phone with a super long cord, and the dude's like this, and he's gaming, like crooked in the neck. And like, he'd be like, yeah, so what you're going to want to do is jump over this, under this, back and forth and back and forth. And if you've ever tried to help a friend get through any part of a video game without just taking the controller, like, that's impossible. But like, I thought that was super cool, because I watched a lot of their commercials and like some of their like YouTube biography things. They're like, yeah, this is what we do here. And it's nuts, because they would have to make these game guides with like colored pencils, permanent markers. Like, there was no, you know, go to Google, get a picture, download it, or whatever, print it out, and then make your annotations. People were just drawing it from memory. And like, some games were harder than others, because they'd be like, oh yeah, I'm in this, you know, this part of the level, there's like gray blocks over here on the bottom right, and it's like all of those levels look the same. It's like, I need a little bit more help. How far are you? Because for the big games like Super Mario, or, you know, maybe even like a, you know, Galaga, right? Like, which I don't know why you're calling somebody because you suck at Galaga. I feel like that's on you. You just got to get good. But yeah, like, you would like just have to go into like some weird game you've never played before and like find a way to beat it, because this customer needs your help. People were calling, and they said that any rep could get anywhere from like 50 to 100 calls in an afternoon, like 20 calls per hour if it got busy. And like, each call, like, you're walking somebody through this problem. Like, every call is different. Like, wild. At first it sounded cool to like work for a video game company in my mind. Like, oh yeah, man, I'm Nintendo support. What's up? And then I think about everything they had to do, and I was like, you couldn't pay me enough. Because you gotta imagine, the average gamer's not super smart. Yeah. Like, they're on the low end. They don't like to solve their own problems. They like to get carried through games. Like, you're not gonna, you know, none of us are calling the Nintendo hotline, right? Like, right, fun fact, though, speaking of early creation of media, Thomas, in my young ages, had a VHS tape that he had made, like, of a run-through, I think it was Zelda, on, like, man, this is a little out of our region here, but I cannot not mention it, that the man was streaming before it was cool. Like, he recorded it on VHS. That was nuts.
What can I say? I was dedicated to my craft at the time.
Dedicated to the craft.
I was a gamer since I was, you know, very, very young, you know, with the 2600. And then as we go through obviously I had an NES. And as we go through, we'll talk about the different consoles. I mean, I've really seen a lot, you know, seen it from its infancy to basically where we are now. So naturally, I mean, it's really hard not to be excited about, you know, anything that was new, anything that you could do. I mean, that game, can't wait to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, where were you getting there? I knew with my Eras tour, I'd have to start in the gutter and make my way out, but we're going to. Towards the end of the 80s, right? In 89 was the year that the TurboGrafx-16 and the Sega Genesis decided they would like to join the party and try to compete with Nintendo, who was just beating the industry over the head with success. And the Turbo tried to be known as the shoot 'em up games and was really what they tried to focus on. The Sega then decided they wanted some love as well, and released a console with a Motorola 68000 processor and a Zilog Z80 chip to start popularizing the term blast processing. Obviously, to 80s scale, right? Like, don't start acting up. This is like less than what you have on your iPhone right now. But for the time, it was high technology. One of the more popular games was The Rise of Sonic the Hedgehog, which to this day, people still love Sonic, and they created a movie around the character to keep the love going. Like, there is a never-ending fan base for Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't get it personally. It wasn't my favorite game. I'll be honest. I didn't love Sonic. Like, they felt repetitive. The boss fights were the best part, but you had to get there, right? I didn't like mobbing my way through levels just to get to a fun boss fight and then get mopped up and then be mad, right? Like, just send me to boss fights. Like, if they released, like, Sonic Legends only boss fights, I would buy that right now. But, like, it was the levels.
I'm here to call you a bald-faced liar. We played Destiny together. We'll get to that when we get to that. And nobody grinded that game harder and worked through crazy, crazy jump mazes and whatnot to get to a boss fight where we get our asses kicked. So you're wrong.
Hey, wait. If Destiny was a 2D scroller, I would not have loved it. If it was 2D scrolling to a boss fight, then I would have been like, negative. I don't want it. And I will say that they were limited by technology, right? Like, so 3D operations, like, which would come around like in the next decade, really made games more like livable. Like, I feel like in arcades and even home arcade situations, it was very like competitive. You were no longer fighting against the world like we do today, like to be the best. Like, you were fighting against your neighborhood, your friends, your siblings, your cousins. So your cousins come over, eat all your food, and then suck at video games. And, like, I'm not speaking from personal experience, but it feels like it, right? Wow. Right. So I'm just saying, you know, they were too young to get down anyways. But, yeah, no, that's either way. I'm just speaking my piece. Like, I would also say that, much like your taste buds, gamers change every 10 years or 20 years, whatever it is.
I mean, but, like, Sonic does have, like, a really huge fan base. I mean, so much so that when the movie came out, like, they made them change Sonic the Hedgehog for how weird he looked.
Well, yeah, you do get an immediate response, for better or for worse. If you tease something and then the viewership's like, yo, we saw that and it's trash. Yeah. Like, you have time to fix it. Like, you do have time to fix it. Because imagine releasing a full-fledged product backed by millions of dollars and it looked like it was supposed to. Bombs immediately. The world would have hated it. So I'm glad that, you know, in our day and age, you can react positively to things like that. At this point, the Nintendo had a fan base that was growing, and they decided might as well roll out handheld gaming systems, right? Because why not? We're making money. What do you do with it? Try to make more. That's a business lesson, but we'll get to that. It sported a sharp LR35902 core at 4.19 megahertz, which is a lot for the time. Let me tell you, that's like blazing. The Nintendo Game Boy became a major success, and it paired Tetris to be one of its rolled out games. Many people also know and love Tetris. Nintendo was like, how do you push out a console or even a handheld console with great success? You pick a game that people already know and love and would love to take somewhere and do, like, while they were, because this is the 80s. There's no texting, no Googling, no sports updating. You were mobbing around with the newspaper if you didn't have something else in your hand. There wasn't a whole lot to do with. With Nintendo's success, Atari wanted to try and take some of that money and compete as well. So they made the Atari Lynx with a 16 megahertz, 65 CO2 8-bit CPU and a colored display. Because that was a big complaint about Nintendo, was that their original Game Boy didn't have a colored display. Yeah. And, like, people were like, that would be cool. And, you know, they tried. Then the Lynx failed. You would later go on to find out that the Lynx was not nearly as good. The color display was a hand over Nintendo's Game Boy, but failed to gain the market for it to succeed. So the Lynx didn't get very far, and you know, time would tell. But did you guys ever play the original Game Boy? I know I did. I didn't love it, but I did. I played it.
I owned one. It was
cool. Yeah, he owned one. Look at him. Yep.
I was Damn. Not. I don't.
I didn't own no
to,
Game
I
Boy.
I don't want to discuss the Lynx I had to go to earn the damn thing. Mom and Dad were not buying me video games for the sake of buying them. So it was like saving all the pennies together to get that thing. And I only had a couple games. I had friends that had all the games. So, you know, I'd take it to school and I'd be like, hey, let me play that game for a little bit, blah, blah, blah.
Pull out your brick. Yep. Like, the battery's literally going to last me like an hour. So let's get it in.
Four double A's is what that bad boy took. Oh, I'll never forget because if those batteries died, you were in absolute hell. But, Tetris was definitely the prime game that I played on there, constantly rolling the Tetris out. It was cool, man. It was you know, for me, it was like the newest, coolest thing. And now, you know, with advancements in technology, it's like nothing. But back then,
you can put one on your iPhone phone case.
True. I can't say that I owned a Game Boy. I did own a Game Boy Color, which I actually have with me. But yeah, but I did get to play a Game Boy, though. And for me, at that time, my favorite game, Super Mario. I loved that, you know, finding all the secrets and stuff for it too, the secret doors or whatnot, secret stages.
I think you just appreciate the blue collar guy chasing after a girl, trying to do all the right things, always running into trouble. Yeah. I feel like you resonate with that, right?
Yeah, no, yeah, 100%. And then at the end of the day, fucking Bowser still gets the princess. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I'm not telling you how the game ends. I'm just telling you, you've seen it before. So tread lightly. Another game I wanted to talk to was Pac-Man was released in 1980 by none other than Big Daddy Bandai Namco. Josh, do you want to lead us off on Pac-Man?
Yeah, so Pac-Man, the creator of Pac-Man, and I'm sure y'all have seen this in what's that game, Pixels, right? Toru Iwatani was the creator of Pac-Man, and you actually get to see him actually in that movie as well.
Another good Japanese pronunciation from Josh.
Dude, he's killing it, right? I'm like, why did I even try when he's over here just doo-dooing on me with all the names?
So Pac-Man, originally called Puck-Man, which actually means Paku Paku Tabaru, which means gobbling something up.
Stop. Just stop. He was practicing.
So it actually refers to gobbling something up, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So whenever they introduced the game over here in America, right, they wanted to put Puck-Man, but there was a lot of people vandalizing that name and switching the P to an F. So comes the name Pac-Man.
Pac-Man.
No, from Puck-Man, they would change the P to an F.
Nah, I was making a joke about the P to an F on Pac-Man.
What's it called? I don't know if y'all played Pac-Man before. I really liked it. I remember one of the earliest.
You don't know if we played Pac-Man?
I don't know.
Thomas, have you played Pac-Man?
Shut your mouth.
I don't know.
I'm just saying. Read the room, Josh. Yeah, I don't know if you guys have played Pac-Man.
I literally just spoke to my lineage of gaming from like before you were a thought to now. And one of the all-time greatest games, you're going to be like, I don't know if you played it or not, but let me tell you a thing or two.
But it came out in the Atari. So this was a game that came out with the Atari. So that was a fun game for people to play at the time. And I mean, I like it. I like Pac-Man. I like the different levels, you know, how harder it gets and whatnot. And I love that Pac-Man was able to put something within the game. As you progress through every levels, it will change. It will give you something, you know, more enticing to see, right? The changing of the colors, right? That you getting all these points and stuff. And then, like, much like, you know, the game Pixels, though, it talks about, like, once you reach a certain point, like, yeah, you break the system. The coding only goes so far.
It had iconic audio. Like, we all know the song and the womp, 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 womp. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't know it. It's in your head. You can hear it as I say it.
Yeah.
But yes, no, Pac-Man was actually created by a 9-man team that wanted it to appeal to females as well as men, because back then it was man's world. And they were like, yo, women are starting to do things. So that I don't know how it appeals to women, but it does, right? And later they would have Miss Pac-Man. But it was like most games were geared towards sports or shooting type games. And Pac-Man was like, why don't we do something different? Come up with like a maze type game, but that also has like a real time feel. And I think they got that because it was one of the highest grossing and best selling games of all time. As of 2016, it had generated $14 billion in revenue and 43 million units sold. Like, if you told me that game would go on to make $14 billion, like, that's an investment. They're doing really good. They're better than the Dallas Cowboys at this point. And it's Puck-Man. Puck-Man would go on to rule the world. So, Thomas, since we both know, sorry, two out of three of us know that you have played Pac-Man, if you could talk to me about your Pac-Man experience, Jesus Christ.
I mean, from an early age, it was one of the most challenging and interesting games from an aspect that, you know, you're outsmarted these ghosts, you know, trying to do all these things. And then it was more not about completing the levels, but getting all of the extra items. So, I mean, for me, you know, that was just something that'll make you, like, try to think a little harder, work a little harder for the extra, you know, much like some of the games that we're going to get into later on, where they offer you that little added challenge. Okay, here's this cherry, here's this banana, here's this pretzel. How bad do you want it? You know, like, are you, like, going to, nah, I'm good, I'm just going to clear the stage, or nope, I'm going to put my juke moves on and beat these ghosts to get this done. So, I mean, hard not to love that game. It was a classic from day one, and I, you know, you can't talk about gaming without it.
Well, I feel like in a realm of 2D games, and I already made my complaint that, like, you're scrolling from left to right, it gave you options, right? There was no... obviously there was a better way to do business, but there was no wrong or right answers in the moment. Like, if you needed to go up, you could go up. If you needed to go down, you could go down. Left, right, center, whatever. And it gave you that, like, decision-making ability. And it was a breath of fresh air in the realm of games of the time, right? Like, this is not like a clear the screen of all the enemies in this much time. It's like, if you find the right path into the code and you can make sense of it, and you get into that good rhythm, like, and for me, I'm a novice Pac-Man player. Like, I was reminded of that when we went to Up Down, because they have a 4-player co-op Pac-Man where you can eat each other. And I think that's a different level of Pac-Man. If you've not played one of those, find a bar in your local area that has one. Anything that has arcade bar in the title of any kind should have it. But it's like 4-player, and I say co-op, but it's versus. It's definitely versus. Co-op means something else entirely. But
what's a
classic game?
Fun fact about Pac-Man. Pretty fun, actually. Whenever they were developing Pac-Man, Namco was already underway with designing Galaxian. Right? The game we just talked
about. Say Galaxian one more time. One more time. But yeah, as a reoccurring theme of today's, you know, episode, is Bandai Namco. Mm-hmm. And they were juggernauts of the era. And so much so that I started rewatching Blue Lock, which is an anime about soccer. And guess whose title splashes on the cover? Bandai Namco. To this day, they are locked into whatever they're doing. Like, that, somebody put them in a lab, study them. You know what's up. You know the deal. So what else you got for 70s, 80s games before I move onward, boys?
It was a really important era. I mean, it really set the stage for everything we know now. I really think that, you know, it was really basic when you look back compared to where we are now. But I think you had to have that to really be able to move on into the eras that we're getting into. As the only guy that can say that, you know, I played it during the era. you know, when you had nothing else, it was really dope. And now you go back and you play some of those games, it's kind of like, all right, this is kind of cool, but hey, where's my graphics at? Like I didn't make these, you know, master race PCs to play Pac-Man. So, but definitely dope.
I mean, for me, I like the sense of the times, right? Like, everybody going out, meeting up at the arcade, right? You know, going to get some change, getting your quarters, getting ready to play. People lining up for, like, the newest games that dropped, you know, at the time. They put a little quarter right there on the screen saying, like, hey, I'm next, you know? I thought that was really cool. You know, much different nowadays. As you can see, anybody can just get in touch with, you know, all their friends, play online games and whatnot. But I really liked that. I feel like that era, that time of game development was really cool.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I think that they had to crawl and walk so that the games of today could run. Speaking of the games of today, my next segment will be video game developers that dawned in the 70s and 80s in one way or another, right? So, topping off the list, we have Square Enix. First game released, The Death Trap, 1984. Only released in Japan, it was a text-based adventure. The game takes place during the Cold War to prepare you for war. So, I don't know if that was issued to military. Like, here you're playing Death Trap 1984, or Death Trap at all. But Square Enix would go on to make games that we've all played. And they got their start in the early 70s. Another big one, Activision, which I believe made Pitfall. And their first game was Dragstar in 1980 for the Atari Video Computer System based on drag racing.
That's so wild. I mean, the fact that like Square Enix, you know, from the game they came from to Final Fantasy and Activision, you know, from that game to Call of Duty nowadays. Yeah, that's insane.
Exactly. Like big leaps, but like this is where they started. Obviously Capcom and their first game was Vulgus 1984, vertically scrolling shooter video game for arcades. Capcom would go on to make great things, such as Street Fighter. That's the biggest one we all know. So this one, Electronic Arts, right? The demon. Hard Hat Mac in 1983 was a construction worker making its way through maps like Donkey Kong. So you would see this a lot in this time frame. Is very similar games. Very, not clones, but they wanted to be something else, right? But EA is one of those game devs that we wish would have just failed, right? the king of microtransactions and their pack luck nonsense. It's been battled by laws and like law disputes or whatever you want to call it, like in court disputes about their microtransactions in other countries. I feel like EA is the one to blame. Now, if a representative from EA would like to reach out to me and buy my favor, I'm not saying another ill word about you. I'm just saying anybody can buy my favor today. I have a price.
Hold on. Did you just knock them for microtransactions and then ask for your own microtransaction?
Clearly, they got money. I play EA FC 25, and I have packed over and over again, and I do not have a Ronaldo, so I feel like it's owed to me.
What you're saying is we're packing later is what we're doing.
Yeah, clearly, obviously. It's my time. This is the day. So, moving on. Wait, what's that Josh just said? Some of you might know Rockstar, right?
No, you have to ask Josh if he knows.
Have you ever heard of Rockstar?
I don't know if you've heard of Rockstar.
Rockstar.
The drink.
But
right?
Yeah, it started off as Rockstar North, but would go through a couple changes of hands and be named Rockstar eventually by itself. Their first game was Menace, released in 1988, where players are tasked with destroying the planet's defense mechanisms in order to kill harmful creatures. But yes, no, Rockstar went through a lot of different changes of hands before it became the Rockstar that we know today for Red Dead, GTA, games of that caliber, which are S-tier games.
Yep. They will ban you. They will ban you.
For no reason at all. Josh stopped playing GTA 5 because he allegedly did some things. Allegedly, he was doing what everybody else was doing. And
everyone was doing the same exploit. I just hopped on and I got banned.
Yeah, you got caught. And you're mad at them because you got caught. Have you ever played Double Dutch? Maybe we should do another episode about games where you get caught in person. Right? So, Ubisoft would release Zombie in 1986, which was very clearly just a horror game. But Ubisoft would go on to make Rainbow Six Siege and all of its counterparts that were attached to it. My drink of the day, brought to you by Naughty Dog. They first released a game called Math Jam in 1986, and I believe it was available on some sort of Apple Mac computer situation. But their first game ever was Math Jam, and then they would go on to make something like The Last of Us, right? Like, that's... I wouldn't have called it then. Like, if you were a prospective, like, oh, would you invest in our company? No, I would not. You take your Math Jam and get out of here. So...
No, I cannot.
Rare, which is a big one, recently acquired by Xbox. But Slalom in 1989 for the UK market was a downhill skiing game, which I think we've all played that PC. It was on Microsoft. Like, you could play the skiing game back, forth, just trying to make the gates. You have Bethesda, which would make Gridiron, a 1986 physics-based sports simulation. Bethesda makes what? That one...
World of Warcraft? Is that Bethesda? I'm pretty sure.
Is that Blizzard?
No, it's Blizzard, you're right.
Yeah, no, it's the Halo. One Fallout. What? Bethesda does not make Halo.
Yeah, they do.
I'll punch you in the chest.
Woo!
Wow.
Bungie made Halo, and then it went to 343 Studios.
I said
Fallout, but the fact that you thought Halo is beyond... Oh, I can't wait for that era. I'm going to punch you in the chest.
On camera.
Walt Disney Computer Systems, or Walt Disney Computer Software, would make Mickey the Great Outdoors, 1983, based off of controlling eggs that roll down slopes with Minnie, his lovely other half, making cameo appearances. So they're in here. Wow. Midway Games which actually, like, huge hand in the gaming world, but never the biggest hand, especially in the arcade games, right? 1976, they made Seawolf, which was based off of Sega's 1966 electromechanical arcade submarine simulator. Like, this is pre-home games. This is arcade, like, electromechanical nonsense. But yes, they made Seawolf. And last on that list, and one near and dear to my heart, Game Freak, in 1989, would make Mendel Palace, also known as Quinty in other countries. Player's character must save his girlfriend, which was kidnapped. Sound familiar? Right. Like, so I feel like the gaming market itself was kind of exclusive to dudes saving their girlfriends. Like, if you made a game where a guy had to save his girlfriend, you probably had a game on your hands. Like, any boardroom of directors would support your game. Like, you know what? Yeah, I could see myself doing that. So those are some of the video game developers that got their start at that point, which is crazy of me. And we will probably touch back on a lot of them moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
But onward and upward, let's talk top 10, the Whiskey Sticks top 10. Mm. I will start us off at like number 7, right? Like, I'm going to throw in my number 7 for the hat. And I'm going to say Dig Dug, number 7.
Dig Dug, number 7. Hold on,
is this the 70s and 80s?
It's 70s and 80s, top 10.
Top 10.
I think Dig Dug slots at like 7.
So
you can pick your number and your game and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
I'm going to have to go with Super Mario at number 3.
Wow.
Super Mario number it's a great game. I mean, the fact that it gave so much versatility. I mean, you know, the different levels, the different stages, the power-ups, right? I just felt it was a great game overall. I'm not going to put it quite at the top because, you know, I want to see what y'all have. But I would say solid 3, Super Mario Bros.
Okay. Let's see.
What's your offering, Thomas?
You know what? Let's go. How about Donkey Kong?
Where you want to put it at?
I'll put it at 10.
You'll put him at 10? I think it's a bit low because Galaxian's still out there.
Oh, you heard Josh? Josh is ready to put that at like on the podium.
You know, yeah, Josh is ready to call that number 2. You're right, Galaxian. It's like, and if you don't agree, it was too hard for you.
So we go.
I'm gonna go number 1.
Ooh.
Tetris. Fight
number
me.
Number 1 Tetris? Wow.
Fight me. Everybody's afraid of the top. I'll get up there.
Dig Dug was 7. What was the one you said, Thomas? Donkey Kong number 4?
Yeah, no, 10. Donkey Kong 10. He threw it all the way back. Yeah, Donkey right? Kong
10 I was leaving the door open for bigger
for discussion, right? Yeah. Like to fight for it. But I feel like you got to kind of find the right space. You know, feel like where we're at.
With the way this list is going here, I'm going to have to put Galaga at 8. Galaga 8. Mm. Not Galaxian right, Galaga.
All right, give me Pac-Man at 5 then.
Pac-Man at 5? I will be the first to say it. Bump it to 4.
Nope.
Bump it to 4. I think Pac-Man's better. And that's just personal experiences. I feel like, well, we got Tetris at 1. We've got, what do we put at 3, Josh?
Mario Bros. 3. Dig Dug at 7. Galaga at 8. Donkey Kong at 10.
So, yeah, I would bump Pac to 4.
You want Pac 4? Is that...
I mean, we got to discuss here.
Yeah. Pac-Man at 4, with the available games out there, it's not a bad call. I would take that. Pac-Man at 4.
So does this mean I got to come up with another one?
Yeah, I think you're next on the list.
Oof. Let's see. All right, here's a game. I don't know if y'all played, but I definitely played because I was on Atari 2600. Combat was a tank game where you had the walls, had to go around, shoot the other tank.
Yeah.
Combat. I'll put that at 6.
Combat at 6?
Any argument?
No, I think that's a solid choice for combat. Now, I'm not sure if I want to take up the number two spot here, put it at five. But, and, you know, that's why we got this discussion. But I'm debating about putting The Legend of Zelda number two.
The Legend of Zelda, that one is hot, but two spot?
It's two spot.
It did not outsell, like, other games of its time. Like, you still got Asteroids out there.
True, uh-huh. True.
Like, that is a banger. Like Pong has to be on this list because it started everything, right? Nah, it doesn't. It doesn't. Like, yeah. I don't think a ton of you guys over there were like, man, Pong is my jam. Like, maybe Dad, but, like, not us. So, where did you want to put it at?
I wanted number two.
So...
But we got 2-5. It's definitely not nine.
If you want, hold on. If you want one that kind of started it all, up at the top, Space Invaders. It's got to be.
That's what I'm saying. It's that's fair. That's the time. That's got to
be up there.
Space Invaders. What about Centipede though?
Well, I take Frogger over Centipede.
Frogger was fun.
I take Frogger over Centipede. I don't know. That's just a personal experience. I gave it more love. Nobody's talking about Qbert. I can feel the room. Nobody's a big fan of Qbert.
No.
You know, I love
me. I'm sorry.
Qbert,
not the character,
just
not the game.
Frustrating. Yeah.
But, the character, right. Lovable.
I'll put Legend of Zelda number five. Number five. And you got 2 and 9 now on the board. Oh. Yeah.
All right, read the list.
So we got Tetris number 1. 2 is vacant. Super Mario Bros. Number 3, Pac-Man number 4, Legend of Zelda number 5, Combat number 6, Dig Dug number 7, Galaga number 8, 9 is vacant, and 10, Donkey Kong.
I'm gonna make a call here. I'd like to slide Donkey Kong down to 9. Like, I feel like it should be higher. Donkey Kong is classic. Not the old school for me, but, like, you know, it's... the newer stuff that holds my heart.
Okay.
So we got 2 and 10 open, yeah?
2 and 10, okay. So moving
on. How do we feel about Missile Command?
Missile Command.
I feel like
I see that Josh doesn't feel it at all.
You can't put Missile Command in this list and not Space Invaders. Because,
yeah, I mean, I would take a 2 Space Invaders.
Okay.
Space Invaders. I'm here for it. I feel like Space Invaders, Asteroids, very in that era, right?
Another one that was, like, popular then... probably not popular now. Lunar Lander.
Fuck that game, dude.
I know. That's why.
You want to talk about Galaxian difficulty? You go play Lunar Lander and then come talk to me.
I know, but
What about Metroid?
Metroid?
Hold on, that doesn't count in that era, does it?
Yeah.
When did it release?
Metroid came out...
I feel like that's early 90s.
The 90s, yeah.
Let me see... Metroid 1986.
All right, what are you fighting for? 10? I mean, my 10 offering is Frogger. I love me some Frogger. So where are we at, Thomas? You gotta delegate this 10 spot because like that's the importance of it. Metroid is, you see, you're young, you're showing your youth because you're like Super Mario, Zelda, okay, Metroid. You know,
what about Mega Man? Mega Man, that's a solid pick. Mega Man 2 came out in 1988.
Mega Man's hot. But is that special to you, or is it special to the world?
I would put Mega Man in there before Metroid. That's where I'm
okay. All right.
Okay, Mega Man versus Frogger. You can't knock Frogger because we've all played it, and we've all spent many hours trying to get across this stupid river and streets and kind of wherever you need to get across. But we've all also referenced playing Frogger when we're out the town.
So here's the thing. In that time, I think Frogger needs to be on the list. The fact that Metroid and Mega Man evolved and got better and probably have better titles further down the
now,
line.
Now, like even Bomberman, yeah.
Exactly. That's where I'm like, okay... You need to reserve those, probably give Frogger its love, and then we can talk Mega Man and Metroid later on down the line. Because Mega Man 3 is definitely going to come up later.
Yeah, for sure. That will be on the list at some point. Just not this list, Josh. Just not this one.
But, I mean, I guess, because Frogger came out in 1981, Mega Man 87, and then 88, Mega Man 2. Oh, given the difference in times, though, I feel like Frogger just didn't have much going on for it. You're just going...
Given the times?
Sideways.
No, with sideways, you were doing it wrong. You go straight. My goal is only move forward.
I don't know. I still got to argue, Mega Man, just for the versatility that I gave you with every map. You know, you got different power-ups. You got, you know, different options, different bosses, different stages, all these different mobs you could fight off, right? Blaster upgrades and whatnot. I feel like Mega Man comes with a lot on.
I feel like Mega Man 1 and 2 did not. I feel like you're talking about the games out of the air. I feel that Thomas had a point. I feel like you're loving Mega Man for the 90s and not for the 80s. But in the 80s, Frogger was king. When's the last time you ran up on a Mega Man arcade game?
Okay, I feel what you're saying. You're saying more so like because Frogger
I'm saying
was
what Thomas said. I ain't saying nothing new.
Vice versa, the late 80s for Mega Man. Okay, I'll take that.
Because Mega Man 1, I'll watch a YouTube video right now. That is not the game you are referencing.
Yeah, Mega Man 1 came out in 1987.
No, but I'm saying that's not the game you're referencing. I was like, you're thinking of later games that were really cool. I'm thinking Frogger as a titan in the industry.
No, okay, gotcha. All right,
so,
fair enough.
Does that round off our top 10? I earned my Frogger stripes.
That rounds off our top 10, starting off with Tetris, number 1, Space Invaders, number 2, Super Mario Bros., number 3, Pac-Man, number 4, Legend of Zelda, number 5, Combat, number 6, Dig Dug, number 7, Galaga, number 8, Donkey Kong, number 9, and Frogger earned his stripes at number 10.
A solid list right there. From a gamer from that era can be proud of for sure.
Yeah, right. And you may like other games more. This is all preference. Like if you want to go statisticals, this probably ends up a lot different. But this is the Whiskey Sticks top 10. So next up, I want to pop into movies, music, whatever. Like what kind of 70s, 80s vibes do you guys hold in your heart? Nothing too crazy. Just a quick, you know, add-on, little touch.
I had mentioned
DLC, earlier, if you will.
I had mentioned it earlier. Pixels. I love the fact that, you know, the beginning of like the movie, the flashbacks and everything, it was taken in that era, the golden age of arcade, right? Coming into now, you know, the future, which is where we're heading, which, you know, I feel like this is a nice little movie of like what we're doing here, your Eras tour, if you will. Yes. So yeah, you know, the fact that, you know, those, you know, and aliens come down and they give them those games IRL, like, hey, good luck. You guys popped off over here in these, you know, 1980s world championships. Good luck with these. So I thought that was really cool.
I give you props on that. It is out of the era when it was produced. Thomas is over there thinking to himself, how can I make Bruce Leroy, the Last Dragon, make sense to everybody else?
Not at all. I'll one-up you on that one. Easy.
Ooh, he's going to one-up it. I could have sworn that was going to be your movie.
We did not discuss this game because it was an arcade game, more than it was a console game. But it was a dope movie that created a series.
I know where he's going with this. I already got it.
Tron.
Yes.
You cannot talk 80s without talking about Tron. Super dope movie, super dope game. The whole idea that you can put yourself in the computer. I mean, the music was super dope.
Oh, amazing.
When we move further on down the line, you know, they're the series. They're coming out with a new Tron movie. Cannot wait.
Yeah,
when I tell you. Yep. We're not talking about that name because of you and your Ariesness. But it's a super dope movie.
And it's a video game.
It's a video game.
Yeah. I like
it. I ain't even mad about it.
Made by Midway.
And there you go. Midway is in there. Then I will steal Bruce Leroy, The Last Dragon. If you haven't seen it, it's a great movie. Classic. Thomas put me on it. I won't lie. And I lie to no one.
Oh, you need that glow, baby.
Yeah, you got to have that glow. The music, the soundtrack, just, ugh. Like, and as far as music goes, I'm going to steal it before anybody else does. Michael Jackson, before he was weird, had my heart and soul. We love little Michael. Like, God. We're going to talk about a titan of industry. We're talking Michael M.F. Jackson. You don't know his middle name. Get with me offline, I'll tell you.
Oh.
I mean, obviously the 80s were big for rock and roll, I think. Mm-hmm. So any of those answers are safe.
If you want to talk popular 80s movies, since this was before y'all's time, I can definitely assist.
Thanks, sir.
The Transformers movie, the OG Transformers movie, 80s classic.
OG, you mean Shia LaBeouf. I know that one. I've seen that one.
Yeah. That's I expected that from Josh. I didn't expect that from you.
Yeah, I'm trolling.
Full Metal Jacket. It's weird because as far as war movies goes, Full Metal Jacket does not get the love, but definitely a you have to watch that movie for me.
It's like onboarding for the military.
Yeah, basically. We watched it on the bus on the way that way. As a bunch of veterans around here, I can definitely speak to it. Goonies, another good movie from the time.
Did we talk Back to the Future?
They did make a game. They did make a Goonies game, but I think it came out later in life.
What's it called? Well, speaking of Transformers, I'll go into the anime side of this. You have Transformers. Yeah, you have Transformers. You have,
animated. Animated. I don't know if they blessed it as anime. That's just animated.
Right, animated, right? But you have, you know, shows like Transformers, Gundam, and we all know Dragon Ball, right? So not Dragon Ball Z, but Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball. If you watch early Dragon Ball, God, hard to watch. Hard to watch.
Not wrong, but
I do not live in the past.
Good watches, though. Good watches. What else?
So, to round off the episode, I got to know, Thomas, what were you doing in the 80s since you were the only member that lasted in those times, the ancient era of the 80s?
I was a young buck. I was doing what, you know, young bucks do back then, playing out in traffic, you know, trying not to die. Like, I mean,
trying not to die is crazy.
Those eras, you know.
Survival of the fittest out here.
Hey,
PvP area.
Hey, they opened the door and let you out the door and you were gone all day. And then you came back in at the end of the day.
Hopefully.
Now you can't let your kids out of your sight because, you know, they'll come up missing. Back then, it was kind of...
Nobody wanted them.
It was kind of the norm. Like, oh, no, that's responsibility. I don't want that, you know. So, while video games were super cool, music was kind of foreign to me because I was still really young. You know, not like now where you consume it in like waves, right? Like everybody's got access. Back then, if you weren't listening to the radio, you didn't have it in your pocket like you have now. You didn't have it with you at all times. So, you know, you really spent a lot of time, you know, like movies were kind of different too. You know, you definitely weren't able to stream things.
Just boast the
face. Like that right there. You couldn't do that in the 80s. You know what I mean?
You could.
There was no interruption like that. You were sitting there silently. back in the day, man, you just kind of like when you got your chance to get your hands on a cool game or, you know, you got a chance to see the movie at the Dollar Flick because that's what we were doing. We were going to the Dollar Flick. I mean, that's what you did.
To just clue everybody in, I was really just looking up what serial killers were active and when Thomas was roaming around in the PvP zone. Like, I just had to check, you know, and I clicked the wrong link. It said YouTube. I didn't see that. My apologies. However, I will have him know there were some people out there he probably didn't want to run into. And for the viewers at home, speaking of this 80s time frame, Thomas looked like Ralph Macchio as a young man. Don't let him lie to you. He did. He did. And like, he could have been a stunt double all day long, covered a sick day. Like the man was the Karate Kid, and nobody could tell me different.
You know, I don't know that you knew that's what you were doing when we talked 80s films, because that's in 84, but good on you, sir. Damn, good job.
Hey, look, I'm going to be honest with you. The way my brain works is how grainy was the film when I saw it last. If it's super grainy, it was probably 80s. 90s, we were in Technicolor at that point. Everything was going great. But, you know, because I'm a 90s baby. Like, Josh is like whatever that came after us, but I'm a 90s baby.
I'm a 90s.
Yeah, you want to be. But let's be honest. Like, you weren't doing nothing in the 90s.
All right. Well, shout out to Blockbuster, though, established 1985.
Do they still have one? Oh yeah, no, like Blockbuster and like what Domino's Pizza owned my childhood.
Yes,
like they really, like, you could stop at one, grab the other. Like, man, that was my least favorite time in history, was renting video games.
I mean, order the Domino's, and you always hoped they were there after 30 minutes, and you're just like, please,
you used to get it for free. Yeah. You know, we used to actually, because I didn't get Domino's. Apparently, you were privileged, Josh. I didn't know that, but now I do. I got Wiener's Pizza. Really? I got Wiener's Pizza. I think it was Winner's, but nobody ever called it that. It was always Wiener's Pizza.
And
it was the cheaper option. So we got that. But it was not the closer option. They were further. They were quite the ways further. But yeah, outside of that, I mean, stay tuned for the next installment of the Eras Tour. We'll be diving into the 90s, and I feel like moving forward, each era, each decade will get its own episode, because that's something that's closer to our hearts. This was Thomas's episode to shine as the old guy, and I think he did a great job. Outstanding. Father Time, you did great. Make sure to stretch before bed. You don't want to get sore in the morning and stiff.
Bro, I stay stretching in the seats. Like, I can't not keep moving.
Gotta stay lubricated.
You know, you gotta keep those joints lubricated or it's a wrap.
Oh, yeah. So, until next time, folks, that's all from the Whiskey Sticks. Thanks for joining us and look out for next week.
Thank you.